Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Not Guy Lombardo, it's Michael Savage. It's Wednesday. You're listening to The Power of Truth. I know many people still think it's vacation time. What a nation. I like the Polk, actually. It's a place I go to once in a while. It's a very, very cheerful joint. Play it louder for a minute to get the people into the tent, okay? Let them put their nose in the tent. I got a lot of things I want to tell them. All right, that's enough. All right. Now, caucuses. Now, unto itself, I have said this for several months. Iowa has as much predictability about who's going to win the election as my dog Teddy does. In fact, Teddy might in some ways know more about who's going to be the next president, depending upon whether he falls asleep at a certain pace or another. I can pretty much predict who's going to win. Why would you expect 800 corn farmers to be predictive of an election? Any more than you'd predict 800 tax dodgers and drunks in New Hampshire to predict it. The only people who seem to be taking this seriously are the politicos themselves and, of course, the morons in the media who are obsessing on this. The average person doesn't care about the Iowa caucus, the New Hampshire caucus. They don't even like the word caucus, to be honest with you. It's another antiquated word. Here we are living in the age of the internet with instant communication, and we have the shameful picture of an 18th or 19th century political system that is clearly broken. When you see so much money being poured down the silos of Iowa simply to get these corn-fed folks to come out in the cold and do some kind of ritualistic voting, what in the heck does that have to do with America today? Nothing. I said you may as well hold a caucus in a housing project in the South Bronx. You get a better read of who's going to win. Or you may as well hold a caucus in the new region called Northern Azteca in Los Angeles. You might get a better prediction of who's going to win. What in the world are you people thinking to listen to the idiots? Never mind ABC, CBS, NBC. They're not the biggest offenders. The biggest offenders are CNN, MSNBC, and Fox News. They're the biggest offenders of this fraud called the Iowa-New Hampshire caucuses. It's a disgrace that a system has reduced itself to this level. You know, it has as much validity as Al Gore's concept that high carbon dioxide levels are causing global warming, which, of course, as you well know, is melting faster than an ice cube in July. That is Al Gore's theory of global warming. Here we have winter again, and here we have nature again, and here we have another set of storms again, and here we have a blizzard in the Midwest again, and here we have the Northeast socked in again, and here on the West Coast we're waiting for 3 or 4 big days of rain and 10 feet of snow. You heard me right. Estimates of 10 feet of snow in the High Sierra, just as has happened going back eons. Eons, and here comes this con man called Al Corleone, and never forget for 1 minute that his father made his fortune working for Arm & Hammer, running the Occidental Coal Company. And there Al Gore came along and he picked up that lesson that we sell everything but the squeal. As the man who used to run the pork factory once said, we sell everything but the squeal. Gore made his first fortune coming in on global warming caused by his father's work for Occidental Coal. And now he's trying to make money on a thing called carbon credits. Now, how many of you insane people are still believing in this rubbish? 400 leading scientists in the world have said it's rubbish. 400 of them. And yet, you get up, it's your religion. So focusing today on various topics on the Savage Nation, not the least of which is the shame of using 18th and 19th century models for a political system that should be in the 21st century. Why in the internet, in the age of the internet, why in the world are we listening to anything to do with so-called caucuses by overfed corn farmers in Iowa, and then a caucus next week by a bunch of tax dodgers and drunks in New Hampshire? I'm not interested in any of it. I don't think it's predictive whatsoever. Do you know how much they're spending? $200 per vote for each of the roughly 250,000 so-called caucus goers in Iowa. Now, that's a little bit more than Bloomberg spent to buy the mayorship in New York City. I told you he bought the election. It came out that he spent $103 for every vote of his own money. He spent $78 million, Bloomberg did, to buy the mayorship of Manhattan. It's New York, excuse me. Well, I do mean it, of Manhattan. There is no New York. There's only Manhattan, as you well know. To people in Manhattan, there is nothing else. But snow hits New England for third day. That's right, it's winter. Read Robert Frost. Snow fell across. Now, if we had a winter, let's say, New England, where the trees were budding and the birds were there, you'd say maybe there's something to Gore's idea. But there isn't. Give it up already. It's a scam like Y2K. Stop it already. How can you people believe this garbage? At least 40 of West Virginia's 55 counties closed all public schools today because of snow-covered roads. Now, for months, we've been hearing that in the Southeast, there's a drought. Drought, 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 drought. That was the story on Weather Channel. Drought, 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 drought in the Southeast. Everyone's going to starve to death. They're going to have to pack their cars up and leave Atlanta. Then all of a sudden, they had rain for four or five days in a row in Atlanta. The reservoirs are filling up. And they have the nerve to go on the air and say, although we had rain for 3 days in a row, the drought is not over. It almost set a record for the low. For the low of low water. It's impossible to believe any of this anymore. And that's, of course, why you turn to me. I am the power of truth personified here on the Savage Nation, the man who does not exist except to his 10 to 20 million listeners. I do not exist to ABC, CBS, NBC. I do not exist to the leprechaun. I do not exist to the wallbanger. I do not exist to garlic breath. That's okay. It doesn't matter to me. I don't need them. They don't need me. I only need you. All I need are you. Now, how do I know that you're loyal? Because in my battle for free speech against the Unfair Care Group, we've done a tally recently. We have over 10,000 of you. Do you hear the number? I want you to listen to the number I just threw out at you. Over 10,000 people who listen to this show have sent money to the Michael Savage Defense Fund. I have not spent one dime of it. I don't think my lawyer has dispersed any of the money. It is all in the legal defense fund. It's a very large amount of money. Keep it flowing because we're going to need every penny of it. We're fighting petrodollars. We believe we are fighting not an American organization, but a petrodollar organization with an American front group. And if you think the Ku Klux Klan was a threat to the United States of America, you have another guest coming. What we have uncovered so far makes the Ku Klux Klan look like a group of nursery schoolers. By the way, that's what's at stake. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. On my website, there are a number of articles I'm going to point out right now. I guess I give too much at once. I've given a lot already. But there's a few I got to get you to look at. I'm going to leave these up for the rest of the week. They're so great. Top left, who is really behind Media Matters? That's the group that's trying to use Soviet-style tactics to destroy conservative talk in America. When we get through with David Brock and Media Matters, you're going to decide for yourself whether they should still be in business or be in an orange jumpsuit. On the right side is a Michael Savage exclusive, All the Candidates' Children. I've come to the conclusion that you can tell some things about people by their children. I'm very proud of my children. Maybe I'm very lucky. Maybe I have nothing to do with my luck. But I've looked around and I ask myself, can we judge anything by the children of the candidates? Now, in the case of Kucinich, we know he has no children because biology has not yet been able to determine what species he is. And so we do not expect to have seen any viviparous reproduction. And consequently, there are no children in the Kucinich camp. That we understand. But some of the others do have children and some of them are quite sterling in their lives. And I guess we should look at them. Someone has a candidate who, one of the candidates has a son who wears his hat on backwards. He should be in Iraq. I think the same candidate came out today to say and says he wants Afghanistan troop surge. Yes, Republican presidential contender Rudy Giuliani, who we affectionately call Waldorf. Rudy Waldorf Giuliani has called for doubling U.S. combat troops in Afghanistan as part of a broader military expansion. Hey, Rudy, I'll tell you what. Could you please ask your son to be the first to volunteer? If any of these candidates who are calling for troop surges really mean it, let them donate or volunteer their own children. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Everybody sing. I would call it Waltzing Wednesday on the Savage Nation, but it's a common man show, so it's Polka Wednesday. No one's out there. I could see his dad already. I should have stayed on vacation. Just went to sleep in the afternoon. That's all. No one there. It's like a dead zone. Is anyone out there? Are any of my regulars out there today? Where are you? I'm going to, like, throw pearls of wisdom before nobody. Does anyone know the lyrics to this? If you can sing the lyrics to Roll Out the Barrel in their entirety, you're going to win a free hat. I don't care how bad your voice is. Here it comes. Call in. You can still win. 1-800-449. Oh, you lost. Sorry. It's too late. These are the Hillary campaigners in Iowa. We caught them in their freedom bus. They're trying to act like just plain folk. Let's look in through the window. Oh, there's Donna Shalala leading the crowd. There's Jenna Reno in the bus. And Lewis. Oh, could you imagine? The three of them would fill the bus. That would be it. All right, no fat jokes. That's all. That's it. It ended because it's like a free pull down from the... How do they get away with that in this world today where you rob songs from people for 20 seconds you can use? Einstein. Where would Einstein be today with all of this? Imagine if Einstein lived in America today and he watched what was going on. For this, I fled Germany. For this, the land of the free and the home of the brave. This is what I fled Germany for. Are these people crazy? Mr. Einstein, what do you think about the French president? The French presidents are big putts. Has he forgotten what arrogance brings to French kings? That's what Einstein would say. A putz running around with a movie star, showing off. The country's burning, they're burning cars, and he's on a vacation in Egypt. I think that's what he would say. I don't know. On my website, we have a picture of girls in Cardiff, Wales, in England. The headline should be, "There is no England anymore." Every 8 seconds, people were admitted to an emergency room in England for drinking. And you see misshapen girls between the ages of 17 and 19 walking around in their panties. At leg warmers, year 2007, I guess they just reached Cardiff. The girls are wearing leg warmers on a cold night in Cardiff. I guess they're out prowling looking for a mate outside a bar that they can rut with. They can fornicate behind a bar. You know, you look at this picture of young girls in England dressing up below the level of a streetwalker, and you start to say, maybe the Muslims have something there. Maybe the burqa would be a better idea than this. Just maybe the girls of England would be better off if they, frankly, were a little more modest. Let's put it to you that way. See, I told you that radical Islam is actually God's answer to the decadent West in a strange way. I didn't say the bombing. You know that. Don't misquote me. I know you're going to misquote me, those of you who hate the truth. But I was the first to tell you that God has a way of balancing things out. And when he sees the West collapsing, decadent, the decadence of the West, so he brings in a flood of people who are the opposite, 7th century people, 8th century people, 9th century people, depending upon where they are on the scale of throwbackdom. And you have to ask yourself, I mean, if you had a choice as to what your daughter should be wearing, should it be panties and a brassiere and leg warmers in the cold at night, prowling around drunk looking for somebody to fornicate with behind the bar, or a burqa? Which would you choose? That's all. Hey, did they have the press conference on the zoo and the tiger? They're blaming the kid now that they said he threw a tree branch and a rock? Well, okay, my position is they should fire the zoo director and put him in prison. The zoo director is an affirmative action appointee who was picked out of the Parks Department of Los Angeles, made a zoo director. And the next thing you know, there was elephants were dead, tigers were dead, people were dead. And I'm sure he'll be moved up to something, you know, by the PETA principle to something much higher. Perhaps in the Bush administration. I mean, a candidate like guy who runs the San Francisco Zoo probably is on a very high short list to become somebody high up in the Bush administration, is the way I can see it. He could take over for Karl Rove. Could you play the polka music again? I'm still warming up because I can see no one's there. It's like dead. Again, the same thing? All right. Let's still roll out the barrel. I'm not going to get too heavy today. Forget about it. I'm going to go out and get a calamari tonight and a bottle of wine. Who needs this? I got an hourglass I bought over the holiday. I have an hourglass running now. It's like an egg timer hourglass, but a big one. All right, turn it off. I was always fascinated by hourglasses as a child. You know what I mean? They were so brilliant in there. How do you figure out how much salt to put in there to make it run for a certain amount of time? And then I used to ask myself as a little kid looking at it, I was the kind of kid who took watches apart, electric trains apart. I couldn't put them back together, but I took them apart. So I'd look at an hourglass with a salt dripping, and I would wonder at age 4 or 5 about how they knew how much salt it would take to be like, let's say it's an 8-minute, thing, hourglass, like an hour. How do they know how much salt? Then I started to think when I was 6, wait a minute, hold it now. What about the heat? Doesn't the heat affect the salt? And wouldn't that change the amount of time? And what about the cold? Wouldn't that change the amount of time? So that's how I wound up in talk radio, by asking those questions. Anyway, right now I have this gigantic hourglass. It's about the size of my dog's, it's as high as my dog. It's a beauty. I bought it in a store that was going out of business over the holidays. I couldn't resist it. I've always been obsessed with time and clocks and that kind of thing. And the hourglass is now running. I don't know how long. It's a long hourglass. If anybody can call me before the last grain of salt drops from the upper piece of glass to the lower, I'll be happy to take your call and give you nothing. 1-800-449-825. I'm just pulling your leg today. There's nothing to talk about. You're not interested in any of the news. I threw already out 15 stories. Fifth, I gave you all the candidates' children. Who is really behind Media Matters? There's no England anymore. What would Einstein think today? An ex-Clinton hater by the name of Richard Mellon Scafey, who was the money man behind many of the attacks upon Clinton, is now a friend of Bill Clinton. And you thought that they were serious. You got swift-boated. You got swift-boated. Bagel. We'll have a bagel of fun. Roll out the bagel. Barbara, sing along. We've got the locks on the run. Zing, boom, ta-ra-ra. Join in a glass of good beer. I'm gonna roll the barrel. The gang's all here. That's the Bagel Barrel Polka lyric, special for you today on 1208. 1208. I never thought I'd make it, truthfully. Ever think you'd live this long? God, goes on and on and on. Turn it off. I remember sitting in grade school. I'm starting to get flashbacks of childhood and grade school and corduroy pants and heaters and smelly children and snow and ice balls and tragedy and, God, all sorts of things. And I remember as I got older, I'd sit in school, I'd write, like year I was born, and I would start like projecting. You know how, did other kids do that, or was I was always obsessed with time? When I was a kid and I wrote down the year 2000 and put underneath it the year I was born, I said, I'll never make it. It's impossible. I can't live that long. It's just impossible with my nature. And then, of course, as the genetics turned out, I had a double barrel shotgun aimed at my head. But here it is. It goes on. I mean, God, you got to thank God every day. Every day. It's like another wonderful phenomenon. You got to say, well, okay, so it's a miracle that you're alive, which it is. When you actually think about it, isn't it a miracle that you're alive? That's what put me into biology originally. I didn't know what to study as a kid. But I knew that I was more interested in the glint in the animal's eye than I was in the animal's anatomy or physiology or such. And so I didn't go directly into any of those, medical fields because, I mean, they were great, but my head was more into what makes the glint in the animal's eye than you know, how does the eye work? Although when I studied comparative anatomy in college, at Queens College, I was awed by what I saw. I took home boxes of bones. Like any kid who studies anatomy, there was the cat, the disarticulated cat, there was the fetal pig. But the one that I found most interesting was the bird, the disarticulated bird, you know, the dried bones. The genius of nature, the genius of God, in designing the bird's bone, I said to myself, this can't be by accident. It's impossible that a bird's bone would be hollow and designed in such a way that it had hollows in it to be lighter. When your kid looks at the bone, he doesn't understand that right away. You have to, the teacher explains it to you. The bird's bone is like our bone in what it does in some way, but it's designed differently than the mammalian bone because it has holes in it to make it lighter so that the animal could fly. He's like, oh my God, it knocks you on your back. You start to realize that there's a mystery behind it all. It's not possible this is all an accident. It's impossible. So you suddenly have it drives you in many different directions when you have those kind of insights. I don't know what it did to you, but to me it's a miracle. So you say, okay, how many days are left in your life? I know it's depressing to even say that, or weeks, or months, or years, or decades if you're younger, right? When you're 25, you don't even think about death. I did since I'm 7. Ever since I'm 6 or 7, I always had the sense of time, always had the sense of time is finite, always had the sense that I had to make some meaning out of it, had to do something with my life, because tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. I was always obsessed with this topic. Ever since I had consciousness, I could remember it for reasons I don't even understand. I think I know why, but they may be only the tip of the iceberg, what went on in the family, you know. Things that happen to people and how they affect. See, some kids, things happen in every family, but it doesn't affect them that way. They go on. They don't even think about it relates to them. I remember thinking when you're 20, 22 myself, what it was like. It was like, death comes, but there's someone else. Death comes, but, you know, I don't have to think about it. It's a long time from now. Oh, I push it away. You can do that at 20, but how can you do that at 40 or 50 or 60? How can you keep doing it? When do you suddenly become aware of the fact that you are a finite being, that you are made of flesh and bone and sinew, and that you will return to the earth? When do you come to that understanding, and how does that affect you? Well, I think most adults come to that rather young, and they become quite religious, except in San Francisco and New York, where they become hedonists, and L.A. They decide, you know, here's something I never understood. Hey, I like to have a good time as much as the next guy. Don't think I'm a prude. Nor a prune, nor do I want you to think that I'm any kind of like moralistic guy who does not have a good time. I'm the exact opposite of that. Believe me, I know how to have a good time, and I'm a very sensual person. But here's the question. I don't understand this question. Here's what I don't understand. I met people who say life is short, so you may as well enjoy every minute of it. Here's why it doesn't make sense to me. I've tried to analyze that. Life is short, so you may as well enjoy every minute of it. So therefore, I'm going to run around, I'm going to go crazy, I'm going to drink, I'm going to have as much sex as I can, I'm going to stuff myself with fatty food. Well, wait a minute. Life is short, so you may as well enjoy it while you can. Now, how does that add up? When does that tally get recorded? It doesn't compute in my head. If life is short, okay, and therefore you may as well have as good a time as you can, like for what reason? I don't get it. I'm not quite understanding that one. I don't put two and two together on that one. You mean like when you get to the next world, you'll know how many days you enjoyed yourself and how many days you didn't? Or on the other hand, if you're an atheist and there is no next world and you gambled and you're right, so what did all that good time do for you? I don't get it. Can anyone explain to me why hedonism makes sense? Is there a hedonist in the crowd who wants to explain to me why hedonism is the proper lifestyle? I don't understand it. I really would like to take a call on the issue of hedonism versus moralism, or versus realism, or versus statism, or versus, whatever ism makes you go. You're glad I'm back, aren't you? I know many of you couldn't take another day of it. It's a vacuum out there. I mean, nature abhors a vacuum, which is why I was created. Oh, it's so bad, man. I turn the television on. I sit there dumbfounded. I said, this can't be happening to me. They can't be this vacuous. It's impossible. They actually believe that you care about Iowa caucuses to the extent that they're all freaking out over it? You don't. You don't care. It's absurd to think that in the age of the nanocentury, in the age of the nanocentury, new phrase, by the way, it's an amalgamation of nanotechnology and century. I gave it to you, just a throwaway little pearl for those of you who understand what I just said. In the age of the nanocentury, yeah, now tell me that they created it at the Free Republic 18 years ago, or the New Republic, or the Old Republic. In the age of the nanocentury, which is what we're living in, are you telling me that using an 18th or 19th century model of an Iowa caucus makes sense? Or a New Hampshire caucus? It doesn't make sense to me. And moreover, we have a media out of control, narcissistic, egomaniacal, insane, that has too much power, that is trying to tell you who's going to win the election before you've even had a chance to think about it. And isn't it obscene? And I know this has been said 10 million times before, but I'll say it again. Isn't it obscene that we've lost in a blur what the candidates stand for and all we heard is how much money they're raising? I mean, I think it's an obscenity, frankly. So we don't have any hedonists to listen to the show. I didn't think so. They're busy. They're at St. Bart's. Why would they listen to me? That's what I think about it now that I think of it. Why would a hedonist listen to this show? There'd be a person who's about to give up hedonism or gave up hedonism, but a hedonist wouldn't be listening to the Savage Nation. A hedonist would be in a warm place with a bathing beauty. It's an old phrase. I use it because I don't want to use a dirty word. French prez acting like a putz. Has he forgotten what arrogance brings to French kings? I become an anti-Sarkozy fan now. Not because he's dating a beautiful chick. God bless him. But because he's showing her off like an adolescent moron. That shows an imbalanced man. That's an imbalanced man for a president of a nation like this to run around with a chick like her who dated rock and roll stars. You know, I understand that. Where these women are at this type. When they get over a certain age, she's still in good shape. There was some rear-end shots. The girl has still got it. I mean, she's got it together. She's not Goldie Hawn already, who has to hide in Los Angeles and come out only at night wearing a muumuu. No, she's not at that. She still wears a good pair of jeans. But that's not the point. You don't walk around with her for everyone to see as if to say, look at my broad. I mean, now what kind of picture is this for the president of a nation to be taken seriously while cars are burning? Do you understand what I just said to you? I need some music. I'm starting to feel better now. The Tofutti ice cream is clicking in along with the Earl Grey tea. It's a nice stay on the Savage Nation. We already did the beer barrel polka. The lights are starting to come on. They're coming in the tent. I'm roughly estimating, for those of you in the radio business, by the amount of people who go on my website as opposed to in a normal season, like when people are not on vacation, the audience is probably at 60 to 70% of its norm during this week. That would be my guess of it's hard to know, really. We don't have electronic metering where we really know in radio. It's just kind of fuzzy. So I'm on my bicycle today on another note, and I bicycle past a school. I see no noise, no kids, no condoms, no cucumbers. They're not learning how to be good little degenerates. I couldn't understand what was wrong. I look in the window. They're not putting condoms on cucumbers. They're not reading Rebecca Has Three Mommies and a Donkey. I said, something's wrong in California. They're not brainwashing the children to become little deviants. So I look up on the board. It says, welcome back on 1708. The little dunces are still away? Again, now think about this. Why are our dunces given such long vacations? Again, a 19th or 18th century model. Why did they close the schools in the winter 150 years ago? Because the children couldn't get to school, by and large, in Iowa, in the Midwest. You know what I'm saying? In the colonial times, post-colonial America, they couldn't get to school. They didn't have, like, a car and a bus with a heater on it. The kid would have frozen to death walking to school. Why did they give him 3 months off in the summer? It wasn't so the teacher could go to a Hedonism 1 vacation on a Caribbean cruise ship. The reason they closed the schools for 10, 12 weeks 150, 200 years ago was because the kid had to, like, work the farm. And it was too hot for him to sit in the class. There was no air conditioning. The kid would have fainted sitting in there. But they got air conditioning now. I'd put these little brats on an 11.5-month-a-year schedule. Ramp it up, man. Get the country going. No caucuses in Iowa. No caucuses in New Hampshire. And an 11.5-month-a-year school. 11.5 months of school. Okay, let's move up to the nano century, boys and girls. And by the way, campaigns should last no more than 30 days before an election. I don't want to hear from these people. I don't want to hear from them. What kind of senator would spend 9 months to a year on the road and not be impeached for violating the oath of her office? Senator Clinton on the road for 9 months? And the schmucks in New York don't raise a stink? It just shows you how sophisticated New Yorkers really are. I'll be right back. Savage. It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about various topics, too many to, as usual, too many to summarize easily. I mean, basically, I'm griping about this bore called Iowa and the bigger bore called New Hampshire coming up next week. God, I can't wait till it's over. Are they going to do this now through October? This is all they're going to do? Hey, did the war on terror end over the holidays, all right? And if the war on terror has been won, why don't they dismantle the Department of Homeland Security? I mean, George Bush built a new bureaucracy that costs us a lot of money. Taxes are going to have to be raised to pay for all of this. If they've done a great job, don't you dismantle a government program that works? Or is it sort of like an endless job, Homeland Security? Or is the war on terror over? How come the Islamo-fascists are suddenly quiet? What happened? How did this all come to an end? Does anyone know why this happened? It just seems like it's over. Like the war on terror was successful and it's over? We're not in danger anymore? We can all... Because even the FBI said that they're going to look for a guy who jumped out of a plane in 1970. I said to myself, that's bizarre. Why would the FBI hire a PR agency to come up with that idea for 2008? Is the most pressing issue on the FBI's list is not MS-13, not Islamofascism, not border security, but a guy who jumped out of a plane in 1970? I said, who came up with this one? Well, who do they think they're talking to? Look, the idiots out there don't know any of this. They don't know what's going on. So they're talking to the class of Americans who do know what's going on, and we don't buy any of this. But it doesn't stop the government bureaucracy from hiring their friends to come up with these ideas. I'd like to know what that cost the FBI to come up with. We're going to spend 2008. Our highest priority is not border security. It's not gang violence. Nope. It's not the drug epidemic. Nope. It's not Islamofascist. Nope. The biggest priority for our agency in 2008 is finding a man who disappeared by jumping out of a plane with money as a skydiver in 1970. Whoa. Hey, I'm going to tune in every day for Elliot Ness on that one. And then there's the Homeland Security. What do they do? If they've done such a good job and they've rounded all up all the bad guys and they got all of the mosques wired for sound, okay, good. Can they dismantle it now? Cincinnati, Ohio, Martin, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I tell you, I was listening to what you were saying about the hedonism and all that compared to living your life responsibly, and I agree with everything you said, and I just kind of wanted to expound on that. As far as, like, the hedonism, the big problem with that and pleasure-seeking is that the mark that you hit a week ago isn't going to give you the same kind of pleasure that it would today, so the ante has to continually be upped, basically.
All right, so the guy who's handsome and can get all the women he wants runs out of pleasure from the women. So then he's got to go to the bazaar in order to get sexual satisfaction, is what you're saying.
Well, he has to do something because what he did like 10 years ago just isn't going to cut it. Stuff gets old and tiresome after a while. The most fun becomes boring if you do it all the time.
All right, but Martin, isn't that what growing up is? You say, well, okay, the guy has had all of this. Now he wants to maybe have children. He realizes it has more meaning in life than, you know, all that sex and no children. That's the, by the way, before you continue, and I want to hear your discourse. My one retort to men who try to boast to me about their sexual successes or conquests, older men, let's say, who have no children, I say, very interesting. All that sex and no children, that usually stops them in their tracks. But go on, please.
Well, what I feel, Michael, is like what you mentioned about, well, okay, life is about learning. And when we're born into this world, we know nothing. So a lot of times when we learn things, it's because we've done things that were not productive. And we eventually realize that, this is not productive. And then learning can occur because we decide to do something that is productive, and then true growth can occur. So,
hold on. I see what you're saying. I agree with it. But you're using a key word in there, productive. To so many millions of spoiled brat Americans, they were never taught that productivity meant anything. In fact, productivity was considered lower class, to actually produce something. or to have a life of value or of meaning was considered somewhat below their class, Martin. You know that there are millions of children raised that way?
Well, I mean, that's eventually you learn because it becomes apparent. I mean, there's only so long you can deny reality, and then it becomes...
But, Martin, many of the very wealthy liberals on Pacific Heights in San Francisco have children who are absolute and total wastrels. Forget the fact that they were junkies. That can happen even in classes of people who have produced, who have worked very hard in the other direction. But even though they're junkies, they're still useless junkies. In other words, there are junkies and others who are useful. There are junkies who produce things. They produce useless junkies who never do anything but go in and out of rehab because their parents taught them they're too good to do anything. They're too good to make anything. They're too good to write anything, paint anything, produce anything, or even to work, Martin. Their parents raised them to be wastrels because to them, that's the mark of their class structure.
Well, I tell you, I mean, unfortunately, that's the great thing about America, Michael. It's like with the Constitution, we basically have the right to achieve as much as we can or achieve as little as we want.
You are right. You know something? You're 100% right. You have the absolute freedom to raise total wastrels in Marin County. That's right, who believe in global warming and in Santa Claus. That's right. Now, let's talk when we come back about hedonism, about Epicureanism. I mean, you know probably what the Epicureans stood for, correct?
Was that food? Just eating lots of food?
Well, that's an interesting one. There was a Roman philosopher, I think, who said that there are three or four ways to live. One is a hedonist, the other is as an Epicurean, and then there was a third or fourth way. I'll have to look it up during the break. I remember reading it sometime. But the Epicurean is different than the hedonist in that he sees the soul and intrinsic good as knowledge, friendship, and living a virtuous and temperate life. So the Epicurean is not to be confused with the Episcopalian, although they both begin with the epic. I don't know how they end. That's just a fun throwaway thing. thanks for the call. That was not bad. I should consider a career in talk radio. Of course, then for the number of people in the tent, I would say that would be for about... Oh, what's the difference? Forget about it. I'll be right back. Be here, okay? Be here, okay? Okay?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Einstein think of the caucuses in Iowa. God. What would Einstein think of the French putts? I mean, the French president. Oh, here we are on the Savage Nation. These are throwaway shows, which means they're the best shows I've ever done. For those of you who tune in every day, I was here Monday, then Tuesday I had to take off because nobody listens. I guess everyone's drunk on Tuesday. Supposed to be drunk, hungover. To show you had a good time New Year's Eve. Got to be drunk on New Year's Eve to show you're a real American. You got to throw up on yourself. That only occurs if you live in England, where they walk around in underwear in the streets. Maybe it would be good if they Islamicized Britain, now that I think about it. They're not worthy of a nation anymore. Go on my website. Take a look at this picture from the Daily Mail of the young girl, 17 to 20, walking around in underwear. And leg warmers. I don't know where the leg warmers came from. It's like 30 years ago. All right, but let's put the leg warmers aside. a bunch of harlots running around looking to fornicate with somebody behind a bar in an alley. That's the New England. There is no England anymore. It's over. They don't. There's no nation there. It's the England's over. It's dead. Tony Blair killed it. Tony Blair destroyed England with his third way. Nobody knows what the third way is. Nobody knows which way it went. Nobody knows where the third way began. Nobody knows how it ended up. But they know that the third way produced fat women, fat girls in panties and leg warmers walking around in the cold, drunk, puking on themselves, looking to fornicate. That's the third way led. Play Roll Out the Barrel while I'm gaining my strength here. I don't know what I want to talk about yet on the Savage Nation. I'm not going to do the caucuses again, man. Even the snob loves this song. That's the beautiful part about polka music. The snottiest person listening to the show finds himself tapping a foot. Like even a vegetarian salivates around a hot dog at a ball game. All right, terrific. Four lyrics, four lines in the whole song, and most people couldn't remember them. Oh, God. Okay. Well, look, I'm not Virgil. I'm not Horace. I'm not Cato. I'm not Cicero. I don't pretend to be. But on the other hand, I'm not a barbarian either. Okay? Somewhere along that long cascade of names, there's me. And for some reason, people like me. For some reason, they listen to the show. For some reason, it is though there are the sound of flutes from heaven itself that bring you to this program every day. And here we are, and I'm asking questions that need to be asked. I'm sorry. I'm asking some questions. Did the war on terror end somewhere around December 15th? And how? When did it come to an end and how? We don't hear any more that there's a yellow light, a green light. The guy who ran Homeland Security last is now working for, was it Bosnia? Or no, working for Croatia as their director of security. He left our country, went to Croatia to run their security department. I couldn't believe it. Like a revolving door. I've never seen anything like it. It's amazing to me how they're allowed to get away with this. A day later, they take a job ready for the other country. You woke up, Bob Dole was having Viagra with skinny arms and a... Remember he ran this? Anyone remember in 2000, the guy was actually a candidate who almost won till they set him up to look naked with an undershirt and pencily arms on a treadmill and he lost? You don't remember that? The guy almost won by accident. We thought he was honest and authentic. Then click, click. Next scene, he's selling Viagra and he's working for Dubai, along with Madeleine Albright, who in between trying to act like she's a pontificating ex-secretary of state, is also a prostitute peddling her soul for a few bucks for the boys in Dubai. You understand that or not? That's sort of a long question in its own way. I haven't just turned it into a question. You can turn it into a question if you wish. I don't think I'm going to do any serious in-depth stuff today. I started it, but I can see already the audience is not there. We'll get to it. We'll get around to it. Around January 15th, next week the brats come back. It takes the brats a week or two to focus in on the Ritalin that they're given and the Jell-O in order to be able to actually steady their hands well enough to slip the condom over the cucumber in California schools. It takes about 2 weeks to steady their hand after a steady diet of junk food and turkey fat. Where are they? What do they do with their children for a month out of school? What in the world are they doing out of school so long? The Chinese are zooming ahead in the nano century we're living in, and our idiots are not in school even. Winter break, winter break, winter break. What for? What, are they gathering corn? They're working in the silo to make sure the gases don't build up? What are they doing? Why are they on vacation? There's no reason for this. There's a nation of morons stuck in the 18th and 19th century. And that's what I'm telling you about the caucus thing. The caucus thing, it makes no sense, Iowa and New Hampshire. Never mind demographically. But that's not such a light issue either. Demographically, it made no sense, and I've been saying it longer than anybody else in the media. I'm nothing against a state that's so literate and so white. God bless them. They're entitled to it. But they're not representative of the average voter in America. You know, you may as well go into a kennel and ask poodles to tap on the floor as to which candidate they're going to vote for. It would be as predictive. Or spill tea leaves down on a table and move them around. And the amount of money, $200 a voter, and again, we're not voting. We're sitting here like we're from Mars and they're from America. Only the schmucks in Iowa sitting there are Americans. We're not Americans here. If you don't live in Iowa, you're not an American. Unless you live in New Hampshire, then you're also an American. Everyone else doesn't count. We're second-class Americans. We get to vote later. Our opinion doesn't count at all to the schmucks at ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, Fox News, and CNN. We don't exist. You get what I'm saying? Do you realize how important this stuff is? To me, it is. That's why I do this. I want to read you something from Peter Bronson, Cincinnati Inquirer. Happy New Year trends. More success in Iraq, less Gore baloney in America. And he wrote this about bamboozling overwarming. Gore baloney. Al Gore's man-made global warming panic is coming unglued like a fifth-grade science project on soggy poster board. A December 20th Senate report listed 400 scientists who dispute his claims, including some who shared his Nobel Peace Prize. Climatologists, meteorologists, and physicists said the public has been, quote, bamboozled and lobotomized, unquote, by, quote, unprecedented media hype and misinformation that Gore and his army have been spreading, unquote. In 20 years, Gore baloney will look as silly as those popular science sketches of commuter jetpacks and bubble cities on the moon. Maybe by then we will also be rid of endless campaigns, biased media, leaky borders, and ecophobia. The world would be a better place if we could climb into a flying car and leave all that behind in 2008. Good writing. Good writing. I don't care if he's a Democrat or a Republican. I don't care what he is. He can write. The man can write. Here's another thing he wrote. Shut the back door. Unless terrorism rearranges the landscape, the biggest issue for 08 will be illegal immigration. Even Midwestern cities like Cincinnati are now affected by illegals who leave no identity footprints. Hospitals, schools, police, jails, public health, and social services struggle to cope with a growing shadow class as large as 20 million. That causes unfair backlash against legal immigrants, rising costs to taxpayers, and exploitation of illegals. Americans want better border enforcement now. Very well put. So this is the Savage Nation. Please don't call on those topics because there's nothing more you could say. The paragraphs speak for themselves. Got my dog underneath the table? No, I'm imagining things. I had a dream the other night after New Year's Eve that I'm going to share with you when I come back, which was the worst nightmare I ever had in my whole life. Now, for those of you who have followed the show for all these 15 years, you know that I'm into, you know, I do a lot of things, whatever it may be. But very often I'll share a dream with you if I think it's a significant dream with regard to a current event. I am going to share something with you that is going to knock you out. And that's for the aficionados out there who really follow the show religiously. You believe me, it's going to be worth your while to have tuned in today when you hear the dream I had. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, so you see how intelligent the late-night comedians are. They couldn't work for over a month because the people who write their lines were off. They're like politicians. It's all fraudulent. It's all empty suits, politicians, entertainers. You don't know where to turn anymore. So a guy like me who has no writer, basically, this is it. Tightrope, that's it. So people say, well, how could he do this? How does he do this for 3 hours a day, 5 days a week with no guests, basically? I mean, I'm generally not a guest-driven show, although in the last few months, I have had two guests in the third hour of each show because I actually think the guests were good. But by and large, how can you turn those shows on? I never watched. I swear to God as my witness. In my entire life, there's an aggregate amount of Letterman of 4 to 5 minutes. Leno, 3 minutes. It's over 20 years. I don't know how anybody can listen to these people. But you see what empty suits they are. Well, all right. What can I tell you? They're about as authentic as a caucus in Iowa. It has as much meaning, by the way. KNEW, San Francisco. Mike, you're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hello, Mike. It's a pleasure talking to you, longtime listener. Listen, I have a question concerning your discussion about hedonism and the afterlife and all that kind of stuff. I'm always amazed about the power of myth and what people think about the afterlife to the point where they'll drive planes and buildings. They would do all kind of ritual. What's your take on the afterlife from your perspective in the power of myth?
Well, it's a big question. I don't know where you're coming from. We could talk for hours, but you have something in your own mind, I think, that I'd rather hear.
Well, the thing is, you know, there's a lot of people hung up on about this concept of life after death. But I think we've been there longer than we've been here, and I don't see why people are so hung up about that.
I don't know, but I know this. None of us know what it is. My mother, God rest her soul, passed away 4 years ago. I always used to joke when I was younger and ask her, what's death? She would say, I don't know, but no one's ever come back to complain. That was a standard joke. That was her, the way she got through life. Is you know what I'm saying? She took an optimistic kind of laughing in the face of fear approach. She said, no one's ever come back to complain from there. What do I know what's there? But I want to tell about a dream. I had promised I'd talk about a dream. I have 4 minutes and 16 seconds to do so. New Year's Eve, go to sleep. Lay down. I don't know. It wasn't late. 12, 1 o'clock, about 1. And I didn't fall asleep. This was not a nightmare. It was sort of a daymare, like in between sleep. The room was dark, laying in bed, on back. I'm not a guy who has trouble falling asleep, by and large. I can sleep. And I fall off into dreams. I swear I'm laying there. I feel the flesh coming off my face, like eerie. I feel the flesh coming off my face, all the sinews disappearing. The eyeballs are just sitting out there. Then they start to disappear. I'm freaking out saying, wait a minute, why am I feeling this? It was like a ghoulish, mescaline LSD-like experience, and I couldn't control it, and yet I wasn't afraid of it. I said, this is absurd. I was like observing my corporal body disintegrating off my bones, and I felt a sense of disappearing into the sands of time. Dissolving, as it were, with the ages pouring over me where I would be just, you know, buried alive. Buried alive. So I'm thinking, what in the heck is this nightmare? So I start with the physiological. I say to myself, you know, remember, I'm a rational person trained in science. I said, what did I eat tonight? Well, I went to someone's house and had some mushrooms in some dish. I said, was there a remnant of some kind of, you know, mescaline or LSD-like compound in a mushroom? It's possible, isn't it? Isn't it possible it could be like a remnant of a mushroom that was slightly poisoned? Yes. I said, okay, that's one, because I didn't have it again the next night. I was afraid of, if this is every night, I'm going to the bug house. But last night I didn't have it, so it was only that night. Then yesterday, I'm still thinking through this dream. What the heck does this dream mean? It's pretty profound. And it was very frightening, I got to tell you. I don't like that sense of, you know, this. I mean, we all know we're going to go that way, but when you start to actually feel it in your lifetime while you're living. So I'm on my bicycle yesterday when I feel good in the air. The best I feel really is on the bicycle when, no, I'm not having to dodge the liberals with the 30-foot leads on their dogs. They're all out of town, thank God, with their children somewhere, and you can ride a bike without an idiot stepping in front of you. It's actually a pleasure. I wish the kids would stay out for the next six. So I'm on the bicycle enjoying pedaling, and I'm feeling my bones and my muscles and my sinews, and I'm feeling the good things about living through exercise, which is the greatest salvation there is, incidentally. Forget psychotherapy. All you really need is bicycling and vitamin C. Mega doses of vitamin C in crystal form and exercise are probably a more profound antidepressant than anything ever invented or tried before. So I'm bicycling. And the thought occurs to me, as I've had many over the years, many great thoughts occur to me after a certain period of time on a bicycle, when the blood flow and this and that. And the thought occurred to me, oh, all you were feeling was is that you're being buried alive by life. So, oh my God, that's a great insight, Mike. Where'd you come up with it? Well, I don't know. You know, I had that like a conversation, like that skitsy conversation with self that we all have if we are into that. And I'm into that. I've been doing it all my life rather successfully. The pondering thing of, you know, blah, 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 on one hand, on the other, just thinking things. So this was the flesh disappearing off the bone in bed, sands coming over me, covering me, and me being buried. Said, you just feel as though you're being buried alive by life. I said, oh, that's an easy one to overcome, really. That means throwing it all away and running away now? What am I supposed to do now, become a puppeteer in Mexico? Just change my name? and get like surgery on my fingertips and become a puppeteer in Mexico and lead like a Fellini life and I'll be a happy man forever after? What does this mean? I mean, join a circus? So that's what I was dealing with. That's all. That's 2008. That's the kickoff ball.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I'm just warming up. I'm telling you, it's no one's listening. Well, no one. By the amount of visitors to the website, it's like 60 to 70%, as I said, of the normal audience are probably listening to the radio. So if they say 10 million, it's 6 to 7 million a week. But I think it's much higher than that anyway, the way numbers, you know, people who don't want to be recorded, you know, that kind of thing. It's like polls. How many of you ever been asked a poll question or responded to a poll? Very few of you, if any. The same with, you know, how you say how many people really listen to a radio show. You think everyone who listens to the show wants to be asked if they listen and would respond to such an inquiry? Of course not. So that's why I go on my own intuition as to how many I really listen, you know. So in a way, you know, it's a friendly place for me to be. And that's why I came into the shop today, the radio shop, to throw around some ideas, and I've done so. I can't say I'm tired yet, but it's coming around to the end of the second hour of the show, and I don't know that I want to get too deeply into the stories that I laid out for you or up on the website. I can do this over the next 3 days and get to a few of them. I think people are still basically, you know, mentally on vacation. You already forgot Bhutto was assassinated. It's over already. Condoleezza Rice, you know, encouraged her to come back, and she got knocked off, and she got away with it. Condoleezza Rice did this. They came up with this cockamamie idea that we need Bhutto on a coalition platform, take off the uniform. They're crazy. They're like crazy people run everything. And here we are. Now Kenya, they're killing each other. Tribal, nothing to do with religion there, so far as I can tell. Again, they get out the machete, cut off the hands, and set them on fire. What's wrong with the African people? What is wrong with them? What is this? They cut people's hands off with machetes in another tribe. They're all black. Cut each other's hands off with a machete and then throw gasoline on them. What is this? What is this? What is going on there? Thank God I live in America. Thank God I wasn't born a slave. Thank God I wasn't born in the 15th century. You realize that the genetic luck we all have? Everyone listening to this show, do you realize the genetic luck you have to even be here now, that we all share the same time on Earth in the most free nation in the history of the world, which can't last much longer? It's impossible. You know, you analyze the history of nations. You analyze the powers that are growing on the Earth that are despotic, such as communist China. And truthfully, it's not a very pleasant thought. No wonder people, you know, don't want to face this, and they want to reject much of this analysis. I mean, there are a lot of savage nations on this globe, and I don't mean that in a tongue-in-cheek way, and we're not one of them. We're actually the most civilized society on the planet, considering all factors. We're the most civilized society on the planet when you consider the amount of welfare we give to bums and the amount of immigrants we take into the country, the amount of hospital care we give to people, how we treat our prisoners. We are the most civilized nation on the globe, despite what the morons on the left would tell you. And yet, we're facing some of the most savage nations the globe has ever seen. And most Americans are actually ignorant of the extent of their dangers. And you are actually ignorant of the number of your enemies. You're sort of lulled right now. You've been told the war on terror is over. All peace reigns. I don't know how this happened. I have no idea how it all of a sudden happened. But most Americans are ignorant to the extent of their enemies, of their dangers, and ignorant to the number of their enemies, just as the ancient Romans were in the fall of the Western Empire. If you actually read, and I'm not throwing a book around just to sound smart, I've quoted this book for 15 years now, Gibbon's The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, which I had to read in high school. I believe I had to read this book in part in high school. It's sad to tell you that I don't think the college students of today even know this book. But it's all very important that you see what happened to a free republic like ancient Rome and how it degenerated over the centuries and then collapsed eventually. And there's a lesson to be learned. But it's astonishing to me that if you really read this book on the fall of the Western Empire, in the decline and fall of the Roman Empire by Gibbon, it's astonishing to me how many similarities and parallels there are even to this day. Really, I mean it. It's amazing to me. Listen to this one-liner. I know many of you love this and some of you can't stand it. So this will be for the former, not the latter. Now, who wrote this part? He's quoting somebody in here within the book. And I don't have it right now, the quote, because I would give it to you. It's just here. I'm going to read it to you. It says, blah, 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 blah. He's talking about the empire collapsing. And he says, they were a people equally incapable of guarding their lives and fortunes against the assault of the barbarians or of defending their reason against the terrors of superstition, okay? And here's what he talks about the Roman government. A Roman government that appeared every day less formidable to its enemies, more odious and oppressive to its subjects. I got to repeat that one. As the Roman Empire was collapsing toward the end, here is the situation. It says, a Roman government that appeared every day less formidable to its enemies, more odious and oppressive to its subjects. For the torch of Rome was flickering low. You hear this? I mean, you got to understand the parallel between that statement of ancient Rome and the parallel of modern America. Do you believe that there's a parallel here where I say that our government appears every day less formidable to its enemies? Sure, we made a mockery of ourselves. For a year now, they threatened Iran. Do you move ahead 1 second, one centrifuge? We're going to bomb. Don't you? And he kept saying, I'm going to build them. And that we every day, you're going to one more step, you take one. It reminds me of the guys who never fight with each other. You do one more, I'll knock. And the guy keeps, and no one hits each other. Every day less formidable to its enemies, more odious and oppressive to its subjects. We feel, most Americans who think, know that our own government feels more odious and oppressive to us, not to our enemies. We feel oppressed and frightened of our own government. There are too many departments, too many people carrying around guns, and we don't know why they're all running around. What are they doing in these departments? How are they protecting us? We ask ourselves. The Greeks, after their country had been reduced into a province, you know, what happens if we're reduced into a province of China in less than 100 years? Right now, we're more or less a province of the Middle East. The best I can figure out, we're sort of a province between East and West, sort of a trade, like a way station between a Dubai and Shanghai, that people of the world who run the world stop over to pick up a few more politicians to use in their bidding to take the final blow. You know what I'm saying? Nah, don't be kidding. We're still powerful. Are you kidding me? Why, we have aircraft carriers flying around and sailing around the Gulf there. They sent the aircraft. Three battle groups went out. Not a plane was launched against the Hitler of our time's nuclear facilities. We have four groups over there. Four aircraft carrier groups, each one having a larger air force than any nation on Earth. And not one plane was launched against one nuclear site in Iran. Not one was launched. What in the heck is this all about? Who's running everything? King Ludwig II, Bush II. King Ludwig Bush II is running everything. King Ludwig Bush II. 1-800-449-8255. Phone number. All these topics, frankly, we could talk about. Oh, please, tomorrow is going to be a horrible day. It's a day tomorrow made only for Wolf Blitzer and the garbage man's son on Meet the Press. I forget his name. Like Mr. Everyman. Yeah, Tim Russin. I'm sure he's a nice guy, man. Clueless, nice guys. Everywhere you turn, nice guys. Get along, go along, get along, go along. Good time, Charlie. Get along, go along. Hey, you're affable. Get along, go along, get along, go along, go along, get along. Get along, go along. It's crazy. And then you got the moron Letterman coming back, exactly like the caucus in Iowa. Without a writer, I mean, what is he possibly going to do? He's going to try to be me. Wait and see. I guarantee you the guy is going to try to be me tonight, try to be a radio talk show host. And people are going to go, ooh, wow, look at that. Old Santa Claus really has it in him. I mean, the other guy could probably talk about carburetors. which would be more interesting than trying to tell a joke when the smart guy who writes him isn't there. At least Leno could talk about carburetors and timing chains. That I would listen to. Los Angeles, Frankie, 8:30 on the dial. You're on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, my daughter, who is a kindergarten teacher at a predominantly Mexican school, says that the schools of the public school system do not open until the second week of January because of the Mexican students that go south of the border and takes them a week to get back.
Oh, well, that's important. After that, first of all, you can't collect any state aid unless the children are counted for each day. So that makes sense to close them. Am I mistaken, or are these winter vacations longer than they've ever been?
Absolutely they are. I'm a California student from back in the 50s, and we went right back to school after Christmas.
Yeah, so did I in New York. I never heard of anything like this. Why are they still out of school in the age of the nanocentury, as I said earlier? Why are the Ritalin heads not learning? Thanks, Frankie. I guess they need to be on the there's no holiday there like the Day of the Dead right now that they have to celebrate on. There's no Day of the Dead. That was another way out of that dream. Notice I haven't had one caller on the dream, which is interesting because I interpreted it myself. The dissolving skin dream, the dissolving face dream, because I interpreted it myself, buried alive. Did we use your phrase, Beowulf? Bi-psychotherapy? Beowulf came up with that. Bi-psychotherapy. Very funny. Very funny, Beowulf. It will be stolen in a second, in a nanosecond. It's on the internet already by someone who's making believe they invented it. Bi-psychotherapy. Very funny. No, but it works. You know that I learned it many, many years ago. Let's say you're subject to depression. Anyone with a brain is, incidentally. Anyone who can think and feel is subject to depression. Hey, hello, secret. Secret to everyone out there. Anybody who can think and feel and actually knows what's going on in America and the world gets depressed from time to time. But anybody, why am I depressed? Just look around. Take a look at Dennis Kucinich, Chris Dodd, Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and you'll know why you're depressed. Take a look at George Bush. Take a look at what's going on around the world, and you have a good reason to understand why you're agitated and depressed. But the fact of the matter is, it's been part of the human condition from the beginning of time. People have always gotten depressed, but they found ways around it other than going to some whack job who put them on an antidepressant, you know, so they could wind up, you know, going on a rampage in a mall 3 years later after bottling up all of their emotions when the Prozac wore off or whatever. You mark my words. You want to mark this one down? Mark this one down. In your lifetime, Prozac-like compounds will be banned because of the violent reactions that too often occur in users of these compounds. You mark my words. The day will come that the medico-pharmaceutical landscape will change, where they'll no longer have a grip over our government to the extent that they do, and people will finally understand that virtually every school shooting was conducted by a kid who was put on these drugs, either Ritalin first and then this stuff later on in life, to deal with the anxiety that had been induced by the Ritalin, and that eventually their violence was a direct side effect of these drugs. You mark my words, this drug will be seen, this class of drugs will eventually be outlawed because of the subpopulation in which it induces violence. And it's quite a large subpopulation, or suicide, by the way. There's a whole spate of suicides and homicides being committed by Prozac takers. Say, oh, he's crazy. I'm crazy. You wait and see how crazy I am. I guarantee you this drug will become, it'll become one of the, it'll be like, what's that drug? It'll be the thalidomide of the mind. This class of drugs will be determined to be the thalidomide of the mind. Another new phrase for you for 2008. This class of drugs will be seen as producing freakish results in people. So what I was getting at is there are natural ways to deal with with anxiety, for example. A lot of people suffer anxiety. Anxiety is part of the human condition as well. It's not an abnormal phenomenon. It's not unique to you if you feel you're anxious. You don't need to reach for a pill. Why do you think so many people are running in the morning and are running around reservoirs and exhausting themselves? They also feel these things. They also have frustrations and fears and anxieties and feelings of dread or running of the mind. You know, Darwin himself suffered from a condition that today is being treated as a medical condition. It never was a medical condition. I think he called it running headedness, where he couldn't control his thoughts, and they ran on and on and on. I have it all the time. That's where creativity is a fountain. It's like a bubbling fountain. You don't bottle it up with a whack job putting you on a drug. A drug nation. And the reason I'm so upset over the drug nation that I live in is because of the drug nation. We have Bush as a president. We have global warming as an idea that would even be accepted for a nanosecond from a shyster like Gore. And we have a slate of candidates, all of whom make you want to puke. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, things are going crazy. Oil is up. Gold rose 3.3% today to $861.10 an ounce, surpassing the previous high of $850 an ounce reached in January 80, and then it dropped back to $858. So, I mean, I'm very glad that I have Swiss America on this show, because it's great to have sponsors who you are very, very happy to talk about. He's not the only sponsor that I love to talk about, but, you know, many of you bought from him, and everybody did well. You know, I wish I had an oil sponsor. Maybe I should hire Madeleine Albright to lobby for me and get Dubai as a sponsor to the show. That might work. Buy Dubai. It's not funny. They own us. My God. Russia will raise the tax on grain exports from 10% to 40%? Wow. Russia will raise the tax on grain exports from 10% to 40%? That's unbelievable. That they want to hold on to their domestic supplies. You see what's going on in this world? China will impose temporary taxes between 5% and 25% on grain exports for a year as part of a Chinese government effort to curb soaring food prices. Do you hear this? You know what that's going to do to our cost of wheat and soybeans? You have any idea? This is unbelievable to me what's going on. It always comes back to natural products and natural resources. It always has. And that's what made America great, is that we were blessed with great natural resources. I went into why the last ice age produced such a fertile Midwest. Remember, we had the show on that once, and how Canada should demand reparations because of the retreating glaciers. But putting that aside, look at this. Our wheat is going to go through the ceiling. Wow, $9 a bushel. Corn rose 12 cents to $4.67 a bushel. Soybeans gained 43 cents to $12.42 a bushel. Coffee futures contract, boom. Coffee is rising through the roof. All natural products. That's all we got on this earth. It's all we have on this earth. Amazing. Truly amazing to see that Russia and China are putting in large taxes on grain exports to stop them exporting food. Well, the benefit of China doing that is we won't have poisoned grain. And we can eat our spaghetti with a little relief, you know, homegrown spaghetti. I only eat organic vegetables now after this food scare. I don't care if it costs a few cents more. I'll tell you, the taste is amazing. I've always tried to eat healthier foods. I wrote books on this years ago, so don't think it's just new to me. I'm not a newcomer to it. I've been writing books on health since 1970, 72, and publishing books on the subject by major publishers, not by a whack job publisher. And I have a real PhD in the field of nutrition, so I know what I'm talking about. But organic food is definitely worth the money if it's certified organic, as opposed to the fakers out there, of whom there are many. I bought raspberries the other day, for example, and I got organic strawberries, then organic raspberries. They were $1 more a box. They tasted like fruit used to taste. I will eat nothing but organic lettuce, and I won't touch it. I mean, I never liked lettuce that it always tasted like chemicals, bad lettuce, right? I wouldn't eat it. I'd spit it out. But organic lettuce, it tastes like lettuce again. So there's a benefit to it. I'm basically giving up on seafood. I'm afraid of seafood. Although last night I had a very good piece of ocean. I'll eat an ocean fish. I'm not going to eat the shellfish. I'm sorry. I never should have eaten it to begin with. It's like it's like certain images you've seen in your life, let's say on the internet, that you never wish you had never seen, that you can't get out of your head, or movies you went to. If you could look back on movies you've gone to from childhood on, that you wish you had never gone to because images went in your head that you can't get out, like, what would they be? Well, it's the same with, like, shrimp. I wish I had never had a shrimp in my life. Going back to the first shrimp cocktail I had in Queens, it's like someone wedding, you know, like, wow, what is this stuff? Ooh, that's good. And you see the whole animal, it looks like a bug. before they strip it of its like invertebrate shell.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Bagel of fun. Out the bagel. We've got the locks on the run. Barbara Boxer, sing along. Boom, da-ra-ra. Join in the glass of good tea. Now it's time to roll the barrel. Gang's all here. God. I'm trying to keep in sync with Hillary Clinton's campaign in Iowa. So we've gone from heavy metal to polka music. Surprised she hasn't come out with a new voice to go along with Iowa. Some kind of, like, a voice heard inside the silo during a cold, you know, a cold day. Hey, do you have the Hillary Clinton clip where she speaks in from the past? You know the one I mean? We played it on Monday where she speaks in that southern drawl when she was in front of a southern audience in a church. Remember she went into that whole speaking in tongues? I'm surprised she hasn't come up with an Iowa voice yet. Put on like donned on like a white hat, like a missionary thing. You can't find it, huh? All right, that's okay. You'll find it. Right?
I don't feel no ways tired. I come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy.
Unbelievable how anybody could take her seriously. Well, then Al Gore, you know, comes up with a theory that nobody takes seriously with an education over the seventh grade. I mean, anybody with over a seventh grade education understands the science is not there. Only Al Gore and Jerry Brown believe in global warming that is caused by greenhouse gases. They're the only two people on the earth. They don't understand that they're actually going to be left in the dust. Once the dust settles and people come to their senses and realize this was a hysteria, a total hysteria, that the global warming consensus is a total fiction. These two people are going to be left in the dustbin of political history. It's amazing to me. Growing numbers of global warming science skeptics are making their opposition known. They include experts in climatology, oceanography, geology, biology, environmental sciences, and physics, among others. They are affiliated with prestigious institutions worldwide, including Harvard, NASA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and the National Center for Atmospheric Research, MIT, the Royal Netherlands Meteorological Institute, and many others. Many shared a portion of the 2007 Nobel Peace Prize, co-won with Al Gore. Others have won previous Nobel Prizes for their research. A U.S. Senate report accumulated more than 400 of their views to refute Al Gore's claim of consensus. And yet, here in the state of California, Jerry Brown is suing the United States EPA over greenhouse gas rules. It's unbelievable. Jerry Brown sued the federal government today in its ongoing bid to set the country's first greenhouse gas limits on cars, trucks, and SUVs, providing new data to show its program is superior to a federal plan. It's wacky. It makes no sense. It will not only cripple the auto industry, which the U.S. auto industry is already reeling, but put that aside, the science is not there. It's flawed science. It's nonsense. It's rubbish. It's moonbeamism again. Moonbeam is back. I thought the guy had changed. I thought Moonbeam had become a realist. I did. He is not. He's the same moonbeam he always was. It's sad to look at this. These people are stuck in the 60s, and they never change. They never change. They're stuck in the 60s forever. And that goes right to Hillary. No matter what she does, no matter what she says, this woman is stuck in the 60s. The same protocols of the 1960s are in her head. I guarantee it. No matter how many accordion players she gets in Iowa, no matter how many babysitters she hires to get the corn farmers out in the snow, she's still stuck in a 60s, in a 60s mentality. You know darn well if she becomes president, the first thing she's going to do is push forward gay-friendly legislation. That's all that's on her mind. That's front and center on her mind. Number one issue to her is homosexual marriage. I guarantee it as I sit here. I guarantee it. Don't ask, don't tell. Flood the military with homosexuals. Destroy the integrity of the troop structure. Believe me, this is all that's on her mind. And then any other element of the cultural Marxist agenda, right down the line. Nothing else. Never mind the accordions and the polka music, by the way. 1-800-4, I'm almost I have some guests in this hour, wow, that I pre-recorded that you're going to want to hear. But before I go off to the three, you know, a couple of minutes, I want to reiterate what I said to you earlier in the show so it's not lost. Snow hits New England for a third day. This is a real cold, wet winter. Everybody knows it but Al Gore and Jerry Brown. In other words, it's exactly the way winter has always been, going back to the Farmer's Almanac and the books you grew up reading. They're the only two people in America who haven't found out that there actually still is a winter and there's no global warming caused by man. It's not anthropogenic, let's put it to you that way. And by the way, Jerry, hello. Hello, Jerry. The Antarctic has a thicker ice pack than ever recorded in history. Hello, Jerry. Michael Savage to Jerry Brown. Are you interested in the facts? The Antarctic, you know, the place on the other side of the globe from the Arctic, right, where the four bears fell into the water, not 4,000, four bears died, as opposed to the hype that your buddy Al put together in the movie. The Antarctic, the one on the south of the globe, Jerry, it has a thicker ice pack than ever seen in recorded history. How do you explain that if man is melting down the ice pack and we're all going to die and the coastline is going to disappear? For God's sakes, man, come to your senses. Save your political career while you can. For God's sake, stop this rubbish. Who are you listening to? I'm certainly not listening to scientists, I can guarantee you. So there it is. Gore baloney. Gore baloney. Al Gore's man-made global warming panic is coming unglued like a fifth-grade science project on soggy poster paper. Up next, Joel Mowbray on the Liberty City 7, whoever they are. Who are the Liberty City 7? I forgot who they are, but we're going to find out. And we're also going to find out why we're losing the war on terror in the courts. Exactly why we're losing the war on terror. I'll be right back. Savage. In an article, Useful Idiots, columnist Joel Mowbray lays out a flagrant case of terrorists slipping through the cracks and why organizations like Unfair Care help them get away with it. Joel, thanks for coming on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for having me on the show.
Joel, who are the Liberty City 7? What did they do? What happened to them?
Well, Michael, look, as you know, one of the problems that prosecutors have in a lot of these unsuccessful terrorism cases, meaning we catch the guys before they actually kill anyone, is that you don't always have hard evidence. You have maybe some leads, and you get somebody to turn, and you have evidence, but it's all circumstantial. Well, imagine if you actually got people swearing an oath to Al-Qaeda on video, and then asking for weapons and uniforms and vehicles, including, by the way, machine guns, not just like, like knives or something. We're talking like real killing machines. And they did this all on video. We have hard evidence. That's what happened in the Liberty City 7 case. Seven guys who are of Haitian background down in an area just south of Miami, and they wanted to start a full ground war, an Islamic ground war against the United States, including doing things like blowing up the Sears Tower. We know this because we have it all on videotape, and the jury couldn't convict on a single count against any of the seven defendants.
Well, what sort of evidence did they have against these guys?
It's actually remarkable just how much evidence there was. And let me first start out by saying, just so people understand, Michael, what we're talking about. In this case, there were four charges brought against each of the seven guys, 28 charges total. Now, one of the charges brought against each of the guys was conspiracy. Conspiracy does not require anything beyond an overt act towards that conspiracy. So in this case, simply taking a pledge of oath to Al-Qaeda would have been enough. Right, but on top of that, these guys went out and took surveillance photos of government buildings that were possible targets of jihadi attacks. So there was more than enough evidence to convict on at least the conspiracy charge, if not several of the other charges brought against each of them. But here's what swayed the jury, or at least several members of the jury, from actually convicting these guys. One of the guys, by the way, was acquitted altogether because he had actually severed ties with the group. He had moved away to Atlanta. So that one was almost understandable. But the other guys, the leader of the cell, took the stand, and he said that he was doing it for the children. Literally, that he was trying to hoodwink what he believed to be Al-Qaeda out of $50,000 to carry out a terrorist attack, but instead he was going to build a community center for children because he cared about the children of his neighborhood and felt they were getting neglected. So he thought, well, what better way to raise money than to get in league with Al-Qaeda, tell them that he wants to start a full Islamic ground war, and then build a fixed target that they could come after once they realize that he's duped them.
Did the jury buy that?
The jury bought it. And here's what's really sad, Michael, is that there was not a shred of corroborating evidence, meaning there was nothing else indicating that this guy actually wanted to build a community center. For example, there were no plans that he had drawn up, like with an architect, to build a community center. There was no building owner currently in the area that he had contacted about taking the building and turning it into a community. There was no evidence other than his testimony at trial to suggest that he actually was, in fact, trying to build a community center. It's a very convenient excuse after the fact. So in order to believe that, over the thousands of hours of taped conversations, they had intercepted phone calls, they taped all the interactions of these guys with undercover informants who were working for the government, and they had to basically take the word of this guy, the leader of this cell, over all the recorded evidence showing that all he was trying to do was to, start a jihadi war against the United States and instead say, oh, he wanted to build a community center. So the only way you could do that, I mean, realistically, is if you want to defy logic and evidence and just find them not guilty because you don't trust the government in going after Muslims. You think Muslims are being persecuted. That's the only rational explanation for not voting to convict these guys.
Truly amazing. Why is it so difficult for juries and prosecutors to obtain a conviction against these terrorists and others?
Well, Michael, after these guys, who again are on video pledging allegiance to Al-Qaeda, when they come back without getting convicted on any of the counts, obviously there was a lot of media speculation as to how that would be possible, right? As some of the people said, look, these guys were pathetic, and they kind of were. I mean, these guys, frankly, did look like the Keystone terrorists. But, who would have thought that 19 guys with box cutters could knock down World Trade Center towers, right? I mean, it only sounds crazy until it happens. Or four guys with backpacks can kill 52 people in the subway system in London. This stuff only sounds fanciful until it happens. So who knows? Maybe these guys were, pathetic, but they probably could have carried out killing if they had gotten to that point. But regardless, that's not what the law requires. It only requires an overt act in that direction. The other thing was these guys were poor, they were black, so maybe this jury, especially with some white liberals on it, felt some sympathy for these guys. But, one thing I think that you and I can both agree is that it's at least as likely that the influence of groups like CARE, the group that's gone after you, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, that these guys have poisoned the jury pool because they have convinced huge swaths of Americans, and I don't just mean Muslims, I mean ordinary Americans, or at least ordinary liberal Americans, that there is a war on against Islam, that Muslims are victims of an overly aggressive U.S. government, that it's not actually a war on terror or war going after terrorists, that it's a war against Muslims. And all the evidence, as you know, points to the opposite, that the U.S. government goes to extreme lengths of caution and diligence in pursuing this. Now, some would say too much, although, look, I'm actually proud of the fact that they haven't turned it into a war on Muslims, because it would be easy to do that, but they haven't. And so you have all these lies out there, though, that have actually, I think, taken some people and turned them against the government. Now, this is significant if these people end up on grand juries who are asked to indict people, or who are on juries at trial and they're asked to convict. And they can basically ignore all the evidence and say, you know what, I don't want to convict. It's jury nullification, but it can happen now more and more in terrorism cases.
So, Joel, what do you think this jury's failure to convict these guys says about an America which seems to be more obsessed with the state of John Edwards' hair than it does about whether we are going to be attacked again in the coming months by a terrorist group?
Well, you know, I don't know what this case, Michael, says about all of America when we're talking about 12 people on a jury. I mean, I think we do have to keep this in perspective. It's hard to read, but if you look at multiple cases so far, terrorism cases, we've seen failure after failure. There was the Samuel Aryan case, you know, the University of South Florida professor who was a computer engineering professor who just also happened to be the head of Palestinian Islamic Jihad for North America, which he admitted to after the trial, where he had 8 acquittals and 9 mistrial or hung jury charges. But look, at the end of the day, the problem here, Michael, is that, you know, and you also have the Holy Land Foundation case in Texas, is that we're finding it harder and harder to convict people. And I wonder, again, if this is the work of CARE and others convincing people that there's a war against Muslims, because you only need one person to hang a jury, one person who says, I'm not going to convict no matter what, and you can't convict.
Amazing stuff, Joel Mowbray. Thanks for being on The Savage Nation.
Michael, as always, thank you for having me on the show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000, or you can send checks to the trust account of Daniel Horowitz. He's my attorney. P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. Daniel Horowitz, attorney, P.O. Box 1547, Lafayette, California, 94549. Say it's for Michael Savage. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Go to www.michaelsavage.com, and God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
The unfair CARE is on the attack against Michael Savage and against freedom of speech. You know this, but few have laid out the details of the case as well as Cinnamon Stillwell, as she did in a recent article on SF Gate. I'm here with her to talk about it. Cinnamon, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks so much, Michael, for having me on the program.
Well, why is this such an important issue? What do you think unfair CARE's ultimate goal is?
Well, I think the importance of this lawsuit is to bring to light the true nature of CARE, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, which touts itself as simply a Muslim civil rights organization in this country and is accorded a great deal of legitimacy and respect in the sort of mainstream arena. You know, they're quoted often in the mainstream media and articles. There are politicians who have met with them. The Bush administration, including, you know, members of, have also treated them as a respectable organization. And yet, at the same time, there is a rather large body of evidence, most of it only on the Internet at this point, which would indicate otherwise, which indicates, in fact, that CARE is, in many ways, a sort of terrorist front organization, or at the very least, one that acts as an apologist for, you know, terrorist groups and Islamist kind of outreach in this country. You know, the term that some have used to describe what CARE is part of is soft jihad, you know, is another way of undermining the United States and undermining the West using non-military means. And, you know, it's the ideological battlefield of the war on terrorism, which still, I think, again, in the sort of mainstream arena in the United States, there's not a large awareness that this is very crucial and maybe even more crucial in some respects than the military aspect of it all. And, you know, CARE accomplishes this by several means, and one of them has been to use intimidation tactics to silence voices that are critical at times of CARE, but more particularly of Islam or of Islamism and Islamic terrorism. And they have done this, you know, through lawsuits. They've also, you know, and when many of their, some of their lawsuits haven't panned out, it seems that they're now turning to boycotts, as in the case of Michael Savage. And, you know, of course, anybody has a right to mount a boycott, and a lot of conservatives have used, you know, economic boycotting as well to indicate their displeasure or their lack of support for any number of companies and causes and things like that. But in the case of CARE, because of their history of using these kinds of tactics to effectively silence people, I mean, you had the case of Michael Graham, the talk show host in Washington, D.C., who actually lost his job because of a CARE-sponsored campaign, and they actually, you know, afterwards applauded the fact that that had happened. And then you had them go after conservative columnist Cal Thomas for comments that he made on a radio show, but his employers stuck by him because he got so much support from the public. You also had CARE meddling in just even fictional scenarios. The TV show 24, when they, it was in the fourth season, had an Islamic terrorist sleeper cell in the storyline. CARE, you know, scheduled a meeting with Fox executives, and it ended up resulting in the star Kiefer Sutherland delivering a sort of disclaimer mid-season, reassuring viewers that not all Muslims were terrorists, which is basically self-evident in the show itself. And, you know, so these kinds of things basically show the sort of power that CARE can have. And when taken to its logical extreme, these kinds of tactics end up silencing voices that are sorely needed. You know, anybody who has now analyzed the war on terror / Islamism at this point knows that what appears to be needed are critical voices, are voices of reform within Islam. And to do that, you have to allow this kind of criticism. This is the kind of criticism that has been standard in other religions, in Western religion. There are shelf loads of books. There's a whole bodies of literature devoted to critiquing, you know, fairly or not, Christianity, Judaism, even other religions, you know, Hinduism, Buddhism, it's all fine. But when it comes to Islam, for some reason, you know, this kind of wall of silence has to be overcome. And CARE, unfortunately, puts itself out there as a voice of a sort of force of backwardness that impedes this kind of progress that can only come about through criticism. And that includes the kind of critical comments that Michael Savage, that you know, made on his show, that started this whole uproar that CARE claims did. If you look at some of the things he said, if these kinds of things had been said about Christianity, there would have been no problem at all. I mean, sure, some people might have been offended, but that's how it goes. And there would not have been some big campaign here to silence him because we're used to it.
Why do you think Unfair CARE has decided on Michael Savage specifically?
Well, I think that, you know, I mean, in some ways, his refusal to kowtow to political correctness, which is exactly what talk radio is all about, is why people listen to his show, is they want to escape, I mean, at least what I think and from what when I've listened, from the constraints of political correctness. There's plenty of that out there, and really it's a form of self-censorship. So, you know, that's the whole point, and you know, and that's the appeal in many ways of his show. And so, on the other hand, that will open you up to, you know, those who have labeled themselves the arbiters of political correctness out there. And I think they may have thought he was vulnerable, but he turned the tables. And, you know, I very much admire this lawsuit because what, you know, there's the question of copyright infringement having to do with them using clips in their fundraising efforts. And, you know, I don't know how that's going to pan out exactly. I don't sort of claim to be an expert there, but I think, I suspect, the sort of main point of it, or what seems most important to me, are all the charges and the greatly detailed text of the lawsuit involving CARE's unsavory background, of which, you know, there are just volumes of evidence out there, and it's a very telling document because it goes down the list of just objectionable statements made by CARE officials, the fact that, you know, basically being apologists for terrorism acts, conspiratorial statements about the 9/11 attacks, CARE itself. I mean, they were founded by, you know, former members of the Islamic Society for Palestine, which the FBI counterterrorism unit has labeled a front group for Hamas. And, of course, they were, you know, named as an unindicted co-conspirator in the recent case involving the Holy Land Foundation in Dallas and its ties to funding Hamas. And they're trying to get rid of that label. But what came to light in the course of that trial, which unfortunately was declared a mistrial and has now come to light, there was a certain amount of bullying going on the jury, which may have led to that. So I think we're going to hear a lot more about that. But one of the things that came to light in the course of the trial was a memo put out in 1991 by the Muslim Brotherhood, which basically cited a strategy to subvert the West using mainstream Islamic front groups, and they named CARE.
What do you think the outcome of this lawsuit will be? How do you think it will play out?
Well, what I'm hoping will happen and what I suspect will happen is that CARE is going to want to settle out of court because they're not going to want to come to light all of the unsavory details, which also include CARE officials being indicted on terrorism-related charges, that could come to light you know, in the process of this lawsuit if it goes forward. And they've done this before in the case when they tried to sue Andrew Whitehead, who's the founder of the website and group Anti-Care, for libel in 2005. And he responded, his lawyer responded with a series of discovery requests, which if it had become part of the trial, would have exposed CARE's background. And they ended up settling out of court. He's never changed anything on his website, which they initially claimed was untrue. So basically, I'm guessing that that's what they're going to do in the case of your lawsuit, because they're not going to want to shed more light on their background and lose, you know, what's left of their mainstream support, you know, of which quite a few politicians and even liberal ones have tried to distance themselves from. I mean, I quoted Barbara Boxer, Chuck Schumer, and even Dick Durbin have all made comments about CARE's ties to terrorism and their background. So this is not just some kind of right-wing, you know, movement or conspiracy here. You know, it's becoming more and more well known. And if this lawsuit, you know, goes all the way through, then it would become even more so. And so I have a feeling they're going to try to settle, and it would be up to you and your lawyer whether or not you choose to agree to do that. But I think the suit itself, I see it as a way of sort of calling their bluff.
If I do win the lawsuit, as I'm sure I will, what will the effect be on unfair CARE's ability to continue to brainwash the United States about Islam?
Well, I mean, it could be a watershed moment here because, you know, one of the things, I think the most important outcome that could come out of it is to finally sort of put this mantle of respectability that has been laid upon CARE to the test. And perhaps more and more politicians and journalists and others who have consulted CARE as if they're some kind of legitimate mainstream organization will start questioning some of their tactics and the fact that they have stepped in every time, like in the case of the flying imams, the six imams who were detained briefly at the Minneapolis-St. Paul airport. CARE immediately, you know, came in and tried to claim another case of Islamophobia. Now, if that had gone all the way through, there ended up, you know, being resistance in that case, you know, the end result would have been to soften the actual tactics that we use at airports to try to prevent terrorist attacks. So it's very important that CARE's alleged respectability and their true motives, you know, be brought to light. And I hope that that's what will come out of this lawsuit.
Cinnamon Stillwell, always a pleasure.
Michael, it's great talking to you. Thanks so much.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Here on the West Coast, we have a big, big storm coming in from the Gulf of Alaska over to the next 3-4 days. Scheduled to drop up to 10 feet of snow. I'll repeat again, 10 feet of snow in the High Sierra, blizzard conditions. And the reason I'm mentioning it, you know, it's a no-no, don't mention weather on a radio show that's national, is because whatever weather hits the West Coast, and a day or two later, you're going to get it in the Midwest and then on the East Coast. So if you've been getting hit with, you know, postcard Christmassy weather, which I know the East Coast has been experiencing, get ready for more. It's going to be a real old man winter. And the only two people who don't realize this are Al Gore and Jerry Brown. 1-800-449-8255, Chicago, Illinois. Let's go to the callers. Dave, WIND, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, you were talking earlier, about an hour ago, about the experience you had on New Year's Eve. And it came off like an experience of solitude, where you had this feeling that you had. I don't know if you actually said that you had a feeling of energy, but you said you had this feeling like your flesh came off your face and your eyeballs were bugging out. But it sounded like you had a feeling of euphoria. Is that right?
No, it wasn't the feeling of euphoria. But I the strange part was I simply observed it. I didn't get frightened. I felt something really odd happening because I've never had this hallucinogenic experience before. I've never used psychedelics. However, I've read about what psychedelics do to people, and it's the closest thing that I could approximate a psychedelic experience I've ever read about. But I didn't take a psychedelic. I ate something with mushrooms in it. I'm thinking maybe there was a remnant of some kind of psychedelic a component left over in a mushroom. Or I had a meltdown, you know, a psycho breakdown from something, and I got over it. In other words, you can even live through that is what I'm saying. In other words, something like that even happens. You don't have to panic and run to a doctor. That's another thing I'm trying to say, Dave. There's first aid for the mind as there's first aid for the hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Can I ask
you? Don't have to go, call up Dr. Freud now. Oh, we'll give you medication. It happens. Things happen to people. We're biological organisms. Things happen to biological organisms. That's all. Thanks for the call. And here in my hometown in San Francisco, KNEW, Steve, welcome. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Yes, Michael, I would love to donate thousands to your CARE lawsuit, but having lost my job 8 months ago, I'm going to try to send you a dollar. But listen, I have an interpretation for your vision.
That's fine. You don't have to send the penny. All you have to do is listen and root for me. What's on your mind?
Your eyes, you lost your eyes because they can take no more of this insanity that you see of the blood-sucking politicians and the flesh-sucking GLBTQ and the self-sucking care group. And your flesh is decaying because you can no longer stand this immorality that's eating away at you. And the sand, I've got to tell you, the sand represents the children of Abraham coming back to the rock, coming to you by the millions, Michael Savage, to rise up and save this nation. And they'll each bring their offering of a great Italian dish and red wine. And unfortunately, all I can bring is two-buck chuck.
Beautiful. Well, if you just bring your spirit and your soul to the show every day, that's really all I need, Steve. Thank you for the call, and I hope you wind up on your feet. 1-800-449-8255. We go to Hartford, Connecticut. Mike, welcome to the Savage Nation by the magic of electrons. What's on your mind?
Hello, Dr. Savage. Happy New Year to you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for bringing the truth to us in America.
What is on your mind in the short time we have left, sir?
Wanted to make a quick comment. You had mentioned to an earlier caller you didn't know why the schools were closed in California. I'm not sure how it works in California. Out here in the Hartford area, with the Latino community, particularly Puerto Rico Puerto Rican community. We have a lot more Puerto Ricans than Mexicans. Three Kings Day is a big day. It's January 6th. And they celebrate it. I know Mexican kids leave their shoes out to get gifts. So they're probably all...
That's very, very quaint. So consequently, because of multiculturalism, the schools are closed for nearly a month to satisfy every culture. Is that it? And the morons learn less than nothing.
Well, unfortunately, they're not learning very much unless they listen to your program. Maybe we.
Well, they are learning how to put a condom on a cucumber in the third grade here in California. And if you actually go on my website, you're not going to believe it. Arnold Schwarzenegger, by the way, the biggest deceiver in the history of the governorship in this state is Arnold Schwarzenegger. I was on to this guy from day one. I never trusted him. Because he's owned lock, stock, and barrel by the homosexual mafia, God only knows why, he passed a bill after being cajoled into it by Sheila Kuehl, one of the most radical lesbian feminists that ever occupied a political office in this state. The children now can declare what their sexuality is in the third grade. They don't have to, if let's say they're born a boy, they're told that they don't have to say they're a boy or a girl. They can decide for themselves what their sex is. That's what they're doing to our children in this state, Mike. They're destroying their minds. Thanks for the call. And unfortunately, just as the weather begins here on the West Coast, so do social trends. I pray to God the people of this country stand up to the sickness that is now passing for social progress in this state. There was a time when the Golden State was the avant-garde. There was a time when the Golden State produced some beautiful ideas and social mores changed. Unfortunately, those times have long passed. What is coming out of this state is unfortunately now just violence and moral pollution. That's all that's being disseminated from Hollywood. There was a time that the movies were uplifting. Can you name a movie that's been uplifting recently? Very few. There have been a few here and there. By and large, they're filled with violence and degeneracy. That's all that's coming out of the idea factories of Palm Springs. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is the same as always. The website is michaelsavage.com. There are super articles. And, of course, all you're going to hear about now from the know-nothings is why Iowa and what's a caucus anyway. Caucus, 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 schmaucus. Iowa is not representative of America any more than New Hampshire is. It's a disgrace. We are living in the nano-century, as I defined it 2 hours ago. The nano-century is here. And yet our political system is still in the buggy whip age. We're living in the buggy whip age politically. The people themselves have moved way past politics. With God's will and your listenership, Michael Savage shall return.
Savage.